Some of us prefer not to include animals or animal products in our diets, and even those of us who do may stop short of eating all animals, like bugs, for example. Many people around the world do include bugs in their diets. Americans generally do not. And today's guest not only suggests Americans reconsider, he shows the way. David George Gordon is also known as the Bug Chef, and he recently released an updated version of his book on the subject. The name could not be clearer, the Eat a Bug Cookbook. David, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on your program.
It's good to have you here. Your books range, I see, from Uncover a Shark to The Field Guide to the Slug.
Yeah, I've written 19 titles.
All right. I guess the interest in nature came first, but how did you turn your attention to cooking your finds?
You know, I was actually working on a book. This is in 1996. I was working on a book about cockroaches, and I kept coming across things about different cultures that eat cockroaches or use them for medicine. So then I started broadening my search, and I found that there were lots of articles, mostly in science journals, about places around the world where people were eating insects. You know, we're kind of the weirdos because we don't. And eventually I went, this is great. There's a good book in here. And that's when I started working on my cookbook.
You give a dedication to your brother, Stuart. What did he do to make you the man you are?
My brother directs horror movies. And the dedication is to Stuart, who showed me that gross can be good.
Ah, okay. Now, it seems like there are some complementary skills in your sibling set there.
Yeah, that's right. And the previous book about cockroaches was dedicated to my mother, who showed me that there's a little bit of good in everybody.
All right. I see this as a revised edition of the Eat a Bug Cookbook. What is new and improved from the original 15 years ago?
Well, you know, first of all, when the original came out, it was before shows like Bizarre Foods and Fear Factor and Anthony Bourdain and all the sort of like traveling and looking at the world's cultures. But in this particular book, I've taken out a couple of recipes. I've added in 7 new ones, so there's actually 40 recipes as opposed to 33 in the original book. And I updated the introduction because there's a lot to be said now from scientists about why eating bugs is good for the planet and good for people.
Good for the planet in what sense?
You know, it's incredibly wasteful to try to raise cattle for meat. You know, if you put 16 pounds of grain in, you'll get 1 pound of meat, and then you actually have to use like thousands of gallons of water for that same pound of meat as well. So that's one thing. You could actually reduce a lot of the waste. I think if you give some insects like 2 or 3 pounds of grain, you'll get a pound of meat. So that's a major savings right there. Some insects don't even need water. They get it from the food they're eating. The other thing is that cattle, which this really kind of cracks me up, they're actually major producers of greenhouse gases. You know, these are the gases that go up into the upper atmosphere. They form a dense layer that lets sunlight come in, but it doesn't let heat go out. So a lot of climate change is related to those, what they call greenhouse gases. Well, the methane and the ammonium from cow manure and cow flatulence is very sizable. It's actually greater in greenhouse gas contributions than what would come out of an automobile or a motorcycle or all of the cars, trucks, and motorcycles on our planet.
Wait a second. So you're saying a cow is going to put out more methane over the course of a year than a Volkswagen Beetle or something?
Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah, absolutely. The amount of methane that is tracked from cattle, going methane and ammonium that goes up into the atmosphere. They say if they raise grasshoppers instead of cattle, they could cut those emissions by as much as 60%.
Love the term entomophagy. Love your term bug appetit, David. How old is this concept? Is this something that's happened in cultures around the world for generations, for centuries?
Yeah, actually, like I mentioned earlier, about 80% of the world's cultures eat insects. That pencils out, according to the UN, to be about 1.9 billion people. And for many of those people, that's a staple that's been in their society, in their culture for a really long time, like probably going back to the Stone Age. There's some that have adopted them more recently, but for most people, it's a comfort food. It's a traditional staple. In fact, if you read the Bible, it says that locusts are kosher.
Really?
Yeah, so even our own ancestors were involved in that at one point.
Sorry, so we're really in the minority. I mean, I was talking to a guest earlier today who mentioned that she'd been at the market in Oaxaca and saw all the bugs for sale there. So Mexico eats bugs right next door to us. What about Canada?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, the indigenous peoples in the United States and in Canada ate insects and other things, caterpillars, for example. But that's in Mexico, that culture is still much more active in terms of the regular daily life. Whereas if you went to Santa Fe or someplace like that, you might find Native Americans who are eating cicadas and things like that, but it's not as obvious as going to the market.
So what's the problem we have? I mean, because we have as many bugs available to us as pretty much any place on the earth, don't we?
Yeah, you know, it's actually amazing to me. Our culture, Western culture, is very big on bashing bugs. We think they're germy and disgusting and gross and, you know, don't bring that into the house. And that's not a view that's shared by a lot of other cultures. It's also not true. And the fact is, if we did not have insects, our own environment would probably collapse in a matter of days.
So how broadly do you define bug for the Eat a Bug cookbook? I mean, is this a broad enough definition to annoy an entomologist?
Yeah, you know, it actually would. A hardcore insect scientist or entomologist would be probably upset, because there actually is one class of insects that are called the true bugs, Hemiptera. But the word bug I use in a vernacular sense. People refer to lobsters as bugs. They refer to crayfish as bugs. And actually, when I looked, this is great, when I looked into the origin of that word, it actually comes from a medieval term, bugaboo, which meant like a little spirit that was so small you couldn't see it. So anything that bothered you, let's say a mosquito or a bed bug, was a bugaboo. And later that just got extended to the term bug. So I can include things like spider recipes, scorpion recipes, and centipede recipes. Those are not insects, but they are land-dwelling arthropods. So that was the way I got up with my term bug.
Well, those land-dwelling arthropods will be prepared on the grill and lots of other ways. We'll talk more with David George Gordon as we revisit our interview about his Eat a Bug cookbook. It is fall fun to drive time here on JPR. Please, your pledge of support is greatly appreciated.
Yes, make that pledge of support now by calling 888-552-6191 or go online to ijpr.org. We need your pledges to stay on the air the last 2 days of the fun drive, so make that pledge of support now. Thank you.
Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're replaying an interview with David George Gordon about the Eat a Bug cookbook, one of our favorite recent guests. It is the second to last day of Fall Fund Drive. We hope to hear from you very soon at 888-552-6191 or ijpr.org. We'll catch up on the totals in just a little bit. Meanwhile, back to our previous interview with David George Gordon. So how old were you when you first undertook the preparation of bugs for meals?
I'm sorry, what was that question?
How old were you when you first got into this?
Oh, how old was I? Well, let's see, 15 years ago. I was in my late 40s.
Okay, so it was something you did not come to early in life. I mean,
no, I wasn't the kid on the playground who would eat a beetle for a dollar.
Darn it, right?
Yeah.
Could have made so much money.
And actually, I had gone to an insect fair, and I live in the Seattle area. I'd gone to an insect fair, and they were serving like a Chex party mix with oven-baked crickets in it. And that was the first bug I ever ate. I thought, well, here goes nothing. And they actually were quite good. So when I started working on my cookbook, one of the very first things I started experimenting with was crickets, because I figured they're kind of the coin of the realm. You can get them year-round at places like pet stores or bait and tackle shops. So they're easy to obtain, they're quite delicious, and they're actually nutritionally balanced, too.
And the book really starts, it seems like you kind of work us into the ones that are a little harder to imagine ourselves eating. And so you start with the hoppy bugs, the crickets and the grasshoppers and stuff in the front of the book.
Yeah, you know, there's actually a recently released report from the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, and they're talking about why we should all be eating more bugs. It was nice to see the UN supporting something I've been saying for 15 years.
And the European Union, I see, has jumped on that same bandwagon.
That's right. People are becoming much more interested. The other thing about a diet of insects is there's a lot of projections about how populations are going to swell by 1 to 2 billion people over the next 50 to 100 years. And we can't really support that many people on this planet by eating the way we do, by everyone wanted a hamburger, we'd be sunk. We can't literally do that.
Right.
So the UN, in the interest of food security, is now pushing the idea of farming insects.
Let us take a call. We have Peter in Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with David George Gordon. He's the author of the Eat a Bug Cookbook.
Another awesome show on JPR. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Curious, first of all, if well, a couple questions and I guess it's the grub that grows inside the palms. You're probably familiar with it.
Oh yeah, I've seen pictures of them, but I've never tried one.
Oh rats! I was down the Amazon 20 years ago and saw someone eat one and said, I just can't get myself to go there yet, but
oh.
he sure did make it look good.
You know, what's funny is they're agricultural pests. You know, they eat palm trees, so you can't import them into the United States, even dead ones.
Really?
They don't want to deal with it.
Right.
So that's why I need to go to the Amazon or to Southeast Asia and try them myself.
Yeah. The other thing is when, like the crickets, I'm wondering if most bugs tend to be, oh, I don't know, sort of like tofu, where they really don't have any flavor. It's just what you do to them. And then my last question for you is, are there reliable bug suppliers in this country, and how do you really know if they're, you know, basically if they're eating good food or they're not contaminated or something like that?
Yeah, right. Those are both good, really good questions. The first thing, your question about the insect's flavors, they actually do have very mild but distinctive flavors. And in my book, I try really hard not to obscure that by burying them in sauces and things like that, so people can actually tell what a scorpion tastes like. Crickets, for example, when they're just cooked by themselves without oil or butter or whatever, they have a very mild shrimp-like taste. And scorpions have taste like crab. Grasshoppers have like a green pepper sort of taste to them. So if you're cooking them properly, you should be able to taste that flavor. But also, if you mix them into a lot of things with a lot of other ingredients, you're right, like tofu, they may start absorbing some of that flavor. So that's question number one. And question number two, I think that pet stores like Petco or PetSmart, any of those large chains, they're buying insects from farms where they're, you know, and being fed to, like, lizards. It may cost $1,000. So those are usually, I believe, safe to eat. They're not going to be raised haphazardly in unhygienic circumstances. But if you really want to go all the way, there's a new company now called World Entomophagy. I think they're currently in Athens, Georgia, and they actually are raising crickets and mealworms organically, solely for human consumption.
I noticed that from a fact sheet that you put pretty early in the book, insects, there are a lot of them out there, a lot of different kinds. So how do they correspond with other parts of the animal kingdom in terms of numbers of species?
Well, you know, insects, let's say the arthropods, because that would also include things like shrimp or lobster or those little krill, the little teeny guys in the ocean, are the most numerous in terms of sheer numbers, but also in terms of numbers of species, different kinds of critters. So any of those, arthropod means a joint-footed animal, you know, any of those body-armored critters, they're all over the place. And my brain isn't great at retaining really large numbers, but I think there's something each person can eat like 20,000 insects and still, you know, be kind of holding their own.
It's an amazing number. And then the history in North America, I was surprised to find a story in here about the Klamath tribes in our part of the world and bug meals they had.
That's right. They actually would light little fires underneath trees, let the smoke go up into pine trees, and all the caterpillars would drop out. And then they could, of course, eat them. So it's like smoked caterpillar.
Wow. So now, before we even get to the recipes, let's talk about some basic nutritional info. You mentioned already that they're pretty good for us, but, I mean, what about ratios of things like protein to fat, that sort of thing? And, you know, from any given bug, what's the most protein you could get out of one?
Yeah, you know what? That's really interesting. But pound for pound, things like dried grasshoppers have about as much protein as lean ground beef.
Really?
So that's, you know, you go out to a McDonald's and have a quarter pounder, or you could have a quarter pound of grasshoppers and you'd be getting the same amount of protein. On the other hand, they're very low in fat. One cup of crickets, that's like, you know, maybe 200 individual crickets, is 250 calories, but only 6 grams of fat. You could be on Weight Watchers and eat those crickets, and maybe it's 1 or 2 points.
Huh. So it seems, I don't know, it just seems like somebody would have been pushing this a bit earlier.
Well, yeah, except our aversion to insects is really strong, and it, unnecessarily, like I said before. I think a lot of that goes back to the days when we got really invested in agriculture, and we're, you know, raising, let's say, a field of wheat, and the locusts show up to eat it. Now we're talking about dealing with the enemy. So there's sort of like a hate campaign almost about insects here. The other thing I want to mention is that a lot of bugs are really rich in vitamins and minerals. Crickets, for instance, they're really rich in calcium. I always tell ladies in the audience when I do cooking demos that they should eat them and they won't have to worry about their fingernails breaking so much.
What is the story about why there's a paper band on the neck of the ketchup bottle?
You know, any of the processed foods, and that would include tomato ketchup, but also jams and jellies, peanut butter, and even chocolate, there are bugs that get in there. It's like impossible to, you know, mash up all these tomatoes without getting a few bugs in there. And the Food and Drug Administration here in the States has actually set allowable limits for the numbers of bugs that can be in certain foods before they're rejected. Someone figured out with those values from the Food and Drug Administration that you could actually have 57 bug parts in a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Oh, yum. Yeah, I remember hearing in school, too, about the number of rodent hairs that are permissible in certain kinds
of
food.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's not
and
good
I don't
that.
Think the rodent hairs are value-added, but I always tease people that if there's bugs in your chocolate bar, it's probably the best part of the chocolate bar nutritionally.
It could be. David George Gordon here on the Jefferson Exchange. It's a replay of an earlier interview from his Eat a Bug Cookbook after its 15-year revision. We are not taking any new phone calls on this segment because it is pre-recorded. We want to give you one other phone number, and that is the Pledge Drive number.
Yes, that number is 888-552-6191, or again, you can pledge online at ijpr.org. 2 days left of this fund drive. Make your pledge of support now.
Please do. And now back to the Eat a Bug Cookbook. Let's take some more calls. Diane in Ashland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with David George Gordon, author of the Eat a Bug Cookbook.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, my question is can we do any self-harvesting here in the area? I'm lulled to sleep every night by the sound of, I think it's crickets. Is there any way to self-harvest? And if so, can we get enough to make it a meal?
Foraging for yourself.
How to do it.
Excellent question, Diane.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Native Americans used to all work cooperatively to drive grasshoppers into a pit where they had hot coals, and the grasshoppers were cooked right on the spot. So if you go out with a sweep net or something like that into a field that has lots of grasshoppers, that's a good way to get something to throw into your freezer and use later. The only thing to watch, though, is that if you live in an urban area, there's a good chance that you or your neighbors are using pesticides, you know, poison to kill bugs before they eat your vegetables or your, you know, ornamentals. And if you eat those bugs after they've eaten the pesticides, it's the same as you eating the pesticides. And the fancy word for this is called bioaccumulation. Over time, you've absorbed a lot of pesticides, and it could really make you sick.
All right,
so I always tell people, go far away from other people before you start collecting.
And there are some cautionary notes in the book, too. I mean, it seems like we've actually gotten nature to do some color coding for us. What are the things that we need to look for visually to discover, to figure out if a bug is good or not to eat?
Yeah, you know, the ones that are not good to eat go way out of their way to tell us so. They're brightly colored bugs, like, let's say, the ladybug, which is red with black spots. In the animal kingdom, think about it. If you tasted really good, you'd want to hide and blend in. So these ones that really have bright, bright colors are sending out a message, don't mess with me, I don't taste good, or I'm poisonous. So that's one good indicator right there. I like to go for green, brown, or even black bugs. But if they're red or yellow or green, I mean, or, you know, really brightly colored orange, that's usually a sign. Monarch butterflies are like that.
All right, so the more subtle the toning, the better for consumption.
That's right. The other precaution I like to share with people is that some people are allergic to bugs. And I know your listeners are probably thinking, well, how would I know? I haven't eaten one yet. If you're allergic to shellfish, lobsters and crabs and that sort of food, you're probably allergic to bugs, too.
Okay, so the whole arthropod thing extends across the whole phylum.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Let us take another call. Russell and Talent, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with David George Gordon, the bug chef.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Good morning, Jeff. Let's get right down to it. How do you prepare bugs? I mean, I've had large bugs prepared in Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
I've had candlefish on the coast at tribal ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
The small fish, you don't bother, you know, cleaning them or anything. You just, you know, prepare the whole thing and eat them.
Crunch away.
Yeah, that's right. And
now, what do we do with bugs? Do we pull off the wings? Do we pull off the legs?
Well, it really
some
varies.
Some of them are very small, so that's
it varies from
a lot of people are waiting for your answer.
Okay, thanks, Russell.
It really varies from species to species. Different kinds of bugs, you have different preparations. I would recommend, of course, first of all, that you buy my cookbook, The Eat a Bug Cookbook, because there's all different ways of cooking bugs in that book. But some parts of bugs are basically roughage. Wings, for example, you know, you would might want to remove those from locusts or large grasshoppers before eating them. What I like to do is buy cricket nymphs. They're not fully grown yet, and even at 4 weeks or 5 weeks of age, they don't have their wings yet. So they're more tender, a little less roughage involved in eating them.
I noticed that they're the ages are specified fairly often in the hopping bugs in particular. So, and that is the reason, because you're getting fewer parts that aren't nutritious.
Yeah, every time a bug molts, you know, sheds its skin and then grows a new one, it looks a little bit more like mom and dad. So, like 4-week-old crickets can't rub their wings together and make chirping noises yet. That takes another molt or two.
So, let me get this quick aside that you put in the book about serving cockroaches to Conan O'Brien. Was that the highlight of your career?
You know, right when my book came out in '98, I was invited to appear on Conan O'Brien's show at that time in New York. And went out there. Well, the producer of that show said, "It's been my life's goal to get Conan O'Brien to eat a cockroach. Would you please bring some?" So I had some oven-baked and Cajun-seasoned cockroaches in a bowl. And at the end of our segment, Conan actually picked up a bug. I found out later he's afraid of insects, so this was, you know, even a big guy like him.
Mm-hmm.
So this was his individual act of courage. He popped this thing into his mouth, chomped away, swallowed. They broke to commercial, and then he went backstage. And I didn't know this till later, but apparently he threw up.
Oh, geez.
So when I called up the station months later and said, "I think you should bring me back so I can do an all-bug Thanksgiving," they said, the producer said, "Well, I'd go for it, but I don't think Conan will."
Oh, wow. So if you were going to do an all-bug Thanksgiving, I don't know how much of a joke that was, but, I mean, what would you serve?
Well, first of all, I talk about this in my book. You know, when you go to have a chicken dinner, it's not all chicken. You don't start out with chicken soup and then have chicken appetizers and then for dinner, it's chicken. You have other things, too. So actually varying the meals with things like side salads or vegetables or things like that is not a bad idea. But in my book, I have some appetizers like tempura battered mealworms, which are delicious. I'll be making some of those this afternoon at Ripley's, believe it or not, in San Francisco. Then working my way through and up to a main course like the scorpion scallopini, or a tempura battered and deep-fried tarantula spider, or maybe the other one I really like is crickets and orzo pasta. So people can kind of fill up on that. And there actually are some recipes for desserts. There's a white chocolate and waxworm cookie in there. There's a cricket tort, chocolate cricket tort. And, of course, there's all these nice chocolate-covered bugs as well.
Yeah, I noticed as I went through the recipes for sure. Before we get to those, I do want to ask, though, the fact that you're going to be doing your preparation at the Ripley's Believe It or Not Center in San Francisco, it's still something of a novelty then. I mean, you do tend to do these demonstrations more at places involving science or anomalies rather than you're not invited to cookware stores, it sounds like.
Well, I've done some cooking demonstrations. I was at Singapore's Food Festival, for example. But you're right. For the most part, we're still at a stage of shock and awe with this cuisine. We have to sort of get a little more comfortable both with the idea of bugs in general, but also with the idea of eating them. So it's actually pretty easy to draw a crowd wherever I go with these demos. Yeah, some people are kind of, I'm only here to observe, mm-hmm. and other people just cannot wait for me to get started because they've traveled a great distance.
David George Gordon on the Jefferson Exchange from our earlier interview about his Eat a Bug cookbook. So the references to him appearing today at the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in San Francisco actually happened a couple of months ago, which is also why we're not taking any new phone calls today. However, Charlotte Duran, we are taking phone calls on another line for an entirely different reason.
Yes, make that call 888-552-6191. It is day 7 of our fall 2013 fund drive, and we are asking for your pledges of support. Again, the number is 888-552-6191, or you can pledge online at ijpr.org.
Couple of people to thank here. Julie Rechten from Aiden, California, thank you for your pledge of support. Jeff and Cora Yockers of Ashland, thank you so much for yours. Marilyn Borkin in Ashland, appreciate your pledge.
And a big thank you to William and Nancy Purdy in Medford and Mary Wilder in Ashland for your pledges of support.
Barbara Vlahos in Central Point says, I can't do without the station. I don't have TV or computer, so I have to have this station. We have to be here for you. We're doing that through this fund drive, 888-552-6191, or pledge online at ijpr.org. So close to $98,000, on the way to $190,000 by tomorrow. Please call soon, 888-552-6191, and thank you. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. This is an encore broadcast of the Jefferson Exchange. We're here live talking to you about our fund drive, but we're replaying an interview from a couple of months ago with David George Gordon, who wrote the Eat a Bug cookbook and then waited 15 years and did some further revisions to it. That's right, eating bugs today on the Jefferson Exchange. Since this interview is pre-recorded, we can't take any new phone calls today. I do want to give you the other number, though, 888-552-6191. To call in your pledges on this next to last day of our pledge drive, or pledge online at ijpr.org. We'll return now to the interview, and David George Gordon is talking about the people who get into the idea of eating bugs. In fact, you've mentioned three distinct groups of people who come to your demonstrations. I think you just listed two of them.
Of course, the ones in the middle, the ones, I'll try anything once, so here goes. That's my all-time favorite people. And I'm also really happy that Northern California and, well, the Northwest in general is full of the adventurous folks. The East Coast is a much harder sell.
Huh. So were you in that middle group when you first tried it? Were you in the I'll try anything once group, you think, when you first
tried
it? Yeah,
absolutely. And at that time, I didn't really realize. There are enormous books. There's one called Insects as Human Food. That's very scholarly 1950s text, where they're looking at all these other cultures and their practices. Well, I wasn't really aware of that at first, so this is almost like a dare. Would you like to try this Chex Mix? Well, sure, and it was great.
Well, I noticed the Chirpy Chex Party Mix. It just seems like a good way to work people into bugs slowly, especially if there's a few beers around.
Yeah, and, with my cooking demos, I try to escalate with starting out with things that are really simple and easy to take in, to swallow, and then working my way up more in shock value. I might end with tarantulas during my program at Ripley's, for example.
Okay, that does answer a question I had, which is I noticed the deep-fried tarantula is the final recipe in the book, like a final exam.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they're expensive to obtain, unfortunately, right at this point, because we're not really investing a lot in tarantula farming like we do other animals. A tarantula might cost you $20 or $25. But they actually are quite tasty. They have nice, meaty legs, and they have instead of having a really crunchy body armor, it's very pliable. So they're chewy rather than crunchy. They taste good.
I want to talk about what appears to be your signature dish. At least it's been referred to that as that by several people. The Orthopteran Orzo.
Oh yeah, Time Magazine called that my signature dish. That made me really feel like a celebrity chef. That's sautéed crickets with onion and green peppers and red peppers, and then orzo pasta, which is that it actually looks like rice. So it's kind of matching the size of the crickets, which is really nice, too.
So on some of these lower-impact recipes, you really are sort of trying for a visual blend, it sounds like.
You know, the visual component is surprisingly important. There's actually sort of a dialogue that goes on between your brain and your stomach when you're about to try something new. And your stomach is kind of going, sending signals like, are you sure this is okay?
Right.
And your brain is actually sending you messages, yeah, go ahead, you'll like it, try it. Everybody else does, or whatever. And if that dialogue goes on for too long, you actually get sick to your stomach. It's like seasickness or something. So a lot of the dishes actually do benefit. You know, people will say to me, I can't eat that grasshopper. It's looking back at me.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, if you put a thin coating of tempura batter or cornmeal or what have you, then it starts looking more like food, and your stomach will settle down and accept that.
Now, you mentioned locusts earlier, and we have regarded bugs like locusts as the enemies because they'll make a mess of your crops, for example. But for actual food by themselves, are they among the meatiest of bugs?
Yeah, you know, we have to go back to the Bible again. John the Baptist lived on locusts and honey, it says in the Bible. And they actually, they're large-bodied animals, and yeah, they're quite meaty. But, you know, meat is basically muscle. Whether it's a cow shoulder or a chicken or what have you, it's the muscle that we're going for. And the muscle in grasshoppers is wrapped up a lot in their legs because they're leaping.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the muscles that propel their wings in case of locusts. So, yeah, those are pretty satisfying, I think.
All right.
You can buy them in Europe. They raise them as food for larger pets, but I have yet to find a good supplier of locusts here in the States.
All right. We have a call here on the line. Let's go to Orr in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with David George Gordon, the author of the Eat a Bug Cookbook.
Hello. I was in Cambodia around 1970, and one night people were crowding around under the streetlights, and they were swarmed with crowds and clouds of bugs. I couldn't figure out what they were doing, why they wanted them. But they put them in the plastic bags and filled up their bags. Next morning, the markets on the street, they were selling those bugs. They had been roasted. I think they were big beetles. And they seemed to have taken off their heads, their wings, and their legs.
Wow, you're making me hungry.
I didn't eat any, but I should have tried them.
Yeah. You know, I sort of had a similar experience in Thailand where they sell giant water bugs. And that's considered a real delicacy. In fact, you can actually go into Asian grocery stores here in the States and buy the flavoring of a giant water bug to add to your food. I didn't try them then, and now I'm kind of kicking myself because I have bought some in frozen food sections of Thai grocery stores and things like that. But to actually have them prepared right on the spot would have been great.
Or thanks for the story. Appreciate that. Since you're talking about the giant water bug, and that's in the fourth section of the book about the smorgasbord from assorted arthropod taxa, how giant is the giant water bug?
Well, the giant ones from Thailand are probably about, I'm going to say 4 inches. They're quite sizable. In the United States, we have smaller ones. It's funny because they live in ponds, and they're predators. They actually can catch and eat fish.
Wow.
And in one case, I actually saw one had caught a frog. I think I saw a video of that on YouTube. So we call them, our nickname for them in the States is toe biters.
Oh,
although I don't believe they've ever bitten anyone's toe. I don't think they're that aggressive as to try to eat one of us. But they're quite large. The nice thing is that their muscles along their sides. So you watch Thai people, they'll very demurely pick them apart. And those mussels have a really distinctive flavor. It's almost like gin. Well, it's like a gin-soaked watermelon is the best way I can describe it.
Wow.
It's very aromatic.
So you get into the second chapter here. The first one's the hopping bugs, we pointed out. The second one is the social insects, which seems to be ratcheting up the gather your guts factor, particularly when you get to termites, which you taste like what?
Yeah, you know, they actually have a really interesting taste. They're very fatty, for one thing. So they have kind of a almost a mild bacon-like flavor.
Wow, that's a good thing to have from termites. But
yeah, we're talking about the winged ones. You know, mm-hmm. there's a time in a termite colony where all these queens-to-be leave the nest and they fly out. And actually, people in Africa or in South America will stake out these termite mounds and catch all of those ones that are coming out because they're larger-bodied animals. They're fatter, and they're considered a delicacy. There have actually been battles fought over who had the rights to which termite mounds. People have been killed over that.
Wow. And with termites, obviously not very popular in our part of the world because they tend to be working your house over pretty well. So
that's right. But if you can't beat them, you should eat them.
Wait, which is actually a real theme here in the third section of the book, Households Household and Garden Pests. You already pointed out the issue with the pesticides, but in some sense, there's a certain amount of human revenge, I guess, on bugs through the eating of the bugs.
Yeah, well, I really do maintain that if we actually handpicked a lot of the pests instead of spraying them with pesticides, first we'd be getting two cash crops from the same acre of land, but also we would be cutting way back on our dependence on pesticides, which I think ultimately can lead to a lot of problems. So in Japan, for example, they actually harvest what are called rice hoppers. These are little grasshoppers that live in the rice paddies and sell them in cans with teriyaki sauce. They, you know, in the United States, we'd fly a plane over and drop all sorts of pesticides on that rice.
Right. So really, really different approaches to how we deal with these things.
Absolutely.
Rice Krispies treats with termites. How different the flavor from the regular Rice Krispies treats?
Oh, they're different. Because you definitely taste the termites in those. I actually did this was great. I was hired years ago to do a help do a promotion for a pest control company that was launching a new termite technology for controlling termites. And their entomologist supplied me with a zillion of these termites. So we made huge batches of the Rice Krispie treats. And much to my delight, they were all gone by the end of the evening.
Now, you also have a couple of recipes with bees in here and point out that there are some issues with handling, which I imagine there are for some of the insects as well, some other bugs, sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, bees themselves, you know, even a dead one, you can get stung by a dead bee. That is the truth. They have that little venom, and some people are actually allergic to it. So that's not a joke to get stung by a bee for them. So I actually tell people to go for the stingless drones. Those are the males who are going to go in hot pursuit of the princesses, the queens-to-be. And they don't even have stingers, so that's a very good way to go.
You really have fun with the recipe names in the book, we should point out. For example, you have alpha bait soup. What's in there?
Yeah, you know, I have to confess that some of the recipes started out as bad puns and worked the other way around. But alpha bait soup has one of my favorite insects called a waxworm. These are actually little caterpillars of a moth. And the moth lays its eggs on the honeycomb in a beehive. And the babies, when they hatch out, the caterpillars get to work eating the wax and the honey. That's like their only food. So what's not to like? They've been eating wax and honey all their lives. So in the alpha bait soup, they're a major ingredient, almost like a pozole. But when you actually bake them, like I do in my, well, I have a wasabi glazed waxworm recipe, or the white chocolate and waxworm cookies, those waxworms taste like pistachio nuts. They're really good.
David George Gordon here on the Jefferson Exchange, letting us know about all the great delicacies out there on six legs and up in his book, The Eat a Bug Cookbook, an interview from several months ago here on the Jefferson Exchange.